before you got here was one of the key things was the basically the attack on the local boards, the weakening of the local boards. That was critical, and that those local boards, their roles have to be restored and strengthened, and they need to be these representative bodies, and elections need to play a role, no question about it. But this is just part of a whole process, it seems to me, of seeing how this complex organization works. And I don't think it's a question of, you know, any particular individuals or groups seeking to grab power and have the final say. I don't want to go back. I mean, I remember years ago Steve Post at a local board meeting talking about the balance of powerlessness in Pacifica. Mm. And obviously you don't want to go be in a situation where you can't move one way or the other. Mm. But I think we need to really think broadly, and we need to involve people who have, you know, histories, you know, struggling in various areas, and who have, you know, demonstrated an understanding of the role of independent and alternative media, rather than a kind of somewhat superficial notions of a quick fix.
Yes. You're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. This is the third of the community listener forums held here on air by WBAI. Ray?
Yeah, no, I was going to say that. I think, to me, the key is really involvement, seriously, of people are educated in the issues. I can tell you that as a labor organizer, the members within, you know, with whom I interact, who really are responsible and make statements and have actions that are to the benefit of the organization are those who are involved and educated through their involvement also. And those statements, either way, you know, completely glorifying, you know, defying the work that I do, or dismissing it completely, come from people who don't know what they're talking about, you know. So to me, this is the key. I personally, this is my position at this point, as a member of the National Board, is going to vote for the bylaws, is to favor election. I see election, though, as a result of a process of education and participation rather than a panacea. But definitely not, I cannot see that process without some form of a decision by the general body. And obviously, I think it has to include some form of accountability through recalling somebody. And again, we have to do it in a responsible way. We have to do it so that it cannot be abused too easily. But ultimately, I think that what we saw, and Anthony, I think, alluded to that situation where the lab actually recalled individuals, and that was completely ignored.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their own representative of the national board, and there was nothing they could do about it.
Anthony, did you want to say anything?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I'd like to say first on the question of programming that you asked about, that I really support this whole process of a formal kind of structure that will allow the various voices that are important in this process to get involved. Certainly the staff, again, had every reason to want to have input in programming content. There are well over 120, I believe, unpaid programmers
mm-hmm.
right now at BAI, and finding their voice, or at least a space for their voice, not to mention all those would-be voices who don't get on the air, has got to be coordinated. But at a higher level, so to speak, there's just a question of content and what directions, what are the things that need to be a part of the programming substance. And we think in our discussions at the lab level and our listener group discussions, I'm hearing more and more that there are voices and opinions that need to be heard from that population. Listeners certainly are those people.
I would hope that we have a listeners program here. And this is, you know, one of the ideas that I had in mind was that this would be a prototype of an ongoing program for listeners to come on the air and talk about things and make suggestions. And then there are other mechanisms like the program council that can be, you know, petitioned in a way, you know, for, you know, whether they agree or disagree with programs. But, you know, Anthony, I want to talk about CPR. The group. First of all, I don't think that many people know about it. Who are you and what does the group want?
Well, CPR is the Community for Progressive Radio, It's an organization that evolved out of the struggle over the past year and a half. That was the immediate one in which the Christmas coup,
and crew
emerged by that motley crew. And specifically, the composition of that group is largely African ancestry people. There are a number of communities of color who have been involved in meetings with us, and a number of activists from all ethnic groups who've worked with us and been involved. We've done a few things of specific note toward pushing the struggle forward during that period before we got back into our network and our station. One of those was holding a series of forums. We did information forums within the African community and the broader listener community. In some of those, we had upwards of 700 or 800 people participating, probably 70 to 80% African ancestry. The importance of that, of course, was that one of the biggest attempts to divert attention and to derail our struggle was that a number of the people who were on the majority side in the past were African ancestry people who used the excuse and the label of racism to try to deflect all of the attempts to get them to do the right thing. What we were able to do through these forums was to actually provide information to people who were getting a steady dose of misinformation over the same airways that we're on now. That was extremely important in that it gave voice to many of those people who were not black, who were struggling against some really difficult situations and who didn't want to be labeled as racist. But more critically, what it did was it provided the kind of strength and critical thinking and information that's already in need in our communities. There was an attempt to cover up and obfuscate questions, and what we were able to do was to help clarify some of the issues. And I think in the end, that was one of the reasons that people like Eutrice Lead and others didn't have the currency. Their credibility was not there because many activists, people who had long histories of struggle, people who had some sense of the issues and the questions, who knew that while the people who had been fired and banned and the network which had been hijacked was not perfect, that it was fundamentally on the right side and that we needed to get that support. So that was probably, I'd say, the most important role of CPR. One other very important one I can say very shortly is that we had a chance to discuss between and among ourselves, that is the African ancestry community with other communities of color, some of the issues and how we felt about the process ultimately that we're in now, which is of democratization and how governance and issues like that would be functional. Lastly, in the last week, we've actually begun to meet with African ancestry and other communities of color to discuss at a national level what may be possible with respect to representation, governance, and programming issues.
Okay. We're going to go to your phone calls in a minute, 212-209-2900. Bob?
Just to get a few ideas in that I hadn't. I mean, I listened to BAI, and I grew up on it late in life. I didn't start listening until about 10 years ago. And I listened, to that word radical, and I wanted to hear unpopular. The idea of only having what the listeners want to hear is somewhat troublesome to me also. I want to hear controversial ideas that I won't hear on the mainstream media. Otherwise, I can go to the mainstream media. So, there's a word professional in the broadcast industry and in many other areas of American society, where a broadcaster is someone above the listener who just presents him with authoritative information. I certainly don't want to see that, but I want to see certainly a separation where programmers can be independent. I mean, the term free speech applies to the person who's on air.
Also,
And we certainly need to hear from listeners, but I am wary of a little bit of having pulling the guy off the stage, too quickly.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I agree, and that's certainly not what I meant. I think when we think about WBAI, I too came to it fairly late. It's my graduate school, and if people had been looking to me for programming, they wouldn't have gotten very much. So fulfilling the mission has taught me a lot, and I've learned a great deal from it. No, I think you're absolutely right. When I say what the listeners want, I also what they need in order to fulfill the mission of Pacifica, which is to educate us.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take just a short musical break. We'll be right back. 212-209-2900 is the number to call to join us here on WBAI, listener-sponsored radio in New York City.
Good show.
Abruptly, we get new CD players, folks. I gotta say that. Okay, again, you're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. We're getting ready to take your phone calls at 212-209-2900. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
All right. The biggest problem that I have with BAI is that, hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The problem that I have with BAI is that it's, to me, BAI has become like a black nationalist radio station that, it's stuck in the 1960s paradigm where it views the world only as black and white. And, there's a lot of communities. You know, the world, the city has changed where there's now a lot more communities that are not being serviced by anybody. And BAI is not servicing these communities, I feel. For example, you know, the Latino community is now the largest minority community in the city, and yet there's, you know, like three shows on BAI dedicated to the Latino community. And there's communities that don't are not even serviced, like the Chinese community, and just communities that don't even have a voice. That
so what do you want to see?
Well, just you know, I would like BAI to start, you know, try to think outside the box and maybe have shows in, you know, native languages, maybe to address these immigrant communities that are not even being serviced. You know, maybe have shows in Chinese, in Spanish, in you know, Indian, that to address these people who don't have a voice, and you know, and just service communities that are
now,
not even.
Now, you said this station is turning is a black nationalist station.
To me, it's
why do you say that?
Because most of the shows on BAI are deal with the black the Pan African I guess you would call philosophy or politics, which, you know, that's great for a black person, but for the, you know, many thousands out here who are not even being serviced and are catching hell, you know, that really doesn't address what they're going through. I mean, you know, for Latino, I'm a Latino, and you know, there's only really three shows, and one of them is a music show. And, you know, and we're the largest minority group now in the city, and we're not being serviced.
Well, when you say you're one of the largest minority groups, one thing about Latino folks is that there's Colombians,
right,
there's Peruvians,
right,
there's Mexicans,
right,
which are growing. And I remember when we had a program hosted by a Mexican in Spanish, there was so much criticism about him speaking in Spanish that it was just incredible to me. You know, but you know, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah,
let's get other people to respond to you. And thanks for calling.
Okay.
Anybody want to tackle that?
No, I think we heard what he had to say, but I would hope that people calling in would sort of relate those kind of questions to the issue of structure that we've been talking about.
And that's what we're really concentrating on. Those are issues of programming, and I think that what we really want to concentrate on is the structure or the proposed structure of WBAI. WBAI,
yeah.
You're on the air. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There is one thing I'm concerned about, although it isn't directly related to structure, but it may be affected by it in terms of programming. And I'm...
Hello? Hello?
Went off the air.
WBAI, you're near. WBAI, you're near.
Okay.
WBAI, you're near.
Hello.
How are you?
Yes. I don't know whether it came up or not, but I just wanted to raise the issue and make sure it was made clear. The reason those people got away with stealing the station, or I think, is because of the presence of the gag rule. And I hope that it's engraved in stone, maybe a huge tablet somewhere, that there will be no gag rule. Because I think that's what really allowed this to happen, the fact that so many of the... I mean, first of all, that was the reason, that was the excuse that was used to fire a lot of people, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they broke the gag rule.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And for someone like me who listens to the station, but I'm just too busy to listen all the time, I was amazed to find out like how many people were actually fired and were gone.
Mm-hmm. I think at the last count it was nearly 30 people that were fired and banned from BAI.
I mean, like
BAI.
Bob Fass, I
from
listened
BAI.
Years ago, and suddenly he's like, they're saying, oh, he's back. I'm like, he's back? He was gone? I mean, I knew about Amy and a few others, but I didn't know the extent. And I think part of it was that the other talk show people, the other people just couldn't talk about it the way they would have otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I guess what I want to know is there going to be anything in place to prevent this from happening again? I mean, is there now something on the books saying the gag rule no longer exists, it's gone, it won't come back?
Well, I believe the New York City national board meeting, the gag rule was ended formally. However, what's going to replace it, is being worked on right now. I mean, I do agree with you that the gag rule was a major piece that prevented discussions and prevented people from knowing what was going on. But it happened itself because key individuals were removed and other people were put in positions before that. So it was a long process. And I think in New York it was more than 30. There are people, 30 people were removed. There are people who were removed way before that, before many of us were paying attention. But you're right, though, this is clearly not, there's no room for a gag rule within the progressive.
Is there any talk about putting it in the bylaws so that later on no station manager can say, gee, I don't like what that producer is saying about me. I'm going to put in a gag rule, or I'm going to do something to make it look like a gag rule. Is there anything to prevent it, let's say, from happening again?
Yeah, that's being looked at, except it's being looked at very carefully, not to really vet, because at the same time there's a notion of free speech, so there's a delicate balance that we have to maintain.
And yeah, I would also suggest
it can get
that,
out of hand, for sure.
Yeah, I would also suggest that there'd be no personal attacks on clearly individual producers, which, you know, is totally unnecessary and not what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you.
All
right.
Bye. Yeah, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a couple points. First of all, you know, to pick up where the last gentleman left off, I was concerned over this whole period of time about the number of people that sort of, number of producers that complied with the gag rule, and the fact that you know, so many so-called good guys stayed on the air while this was going on. That's one point. And a second thing is, I'd like to have clarified exactly what the accountability chain for this money, the money ripoff is, and whether any steps are being taken to retrieve funds, or whether people are being sued, or is anybody being held accountable for that. Those are two things that have been sort of irking me.
Okay, let's respond to them. Thank you.
Well, let me just have one point that's not related to those, and then I'll get off and listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the issue on the whole other side of the spectrum of just good radio personalities making good radio programs, in spite, you know, with nothing to do with the politics. Or, you know, to use someone like Howard Fast as a model, or Jonathan Schwartz from another network, you know, just kind of great radio voices. And it seems like while everything else is going on, that we need to be paying attention about getting these really great people to be on the station, and to maybe have more programs, and not so much, you know, not have the same person every day all the time for large time slots and stuff like that. So that's my third point. And I'll listen now.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks so much.
Anybody want to respond to the financial accountability?
It's my understanding that was part of the stipulation that got the station back, was that those on the board would not be held accountable for their civil crimes. The other thing he said about having great figures from our society and the world coming on, that's the programmer's choice. I think Amy Goodman is constantly searching for the best progressive radicals she can put on, and other producers as well.
I would make a slight correction over what you said about accountability, you know, financial accountability. The deal actually let people off the hook, except if it could be shown that there clearly was malfeasance. And in the last board meeting that took place recently, which was a conference call webcast, it was again made clear that we have hired a law firm that is looking at every single expense. The first thing the board did was to stop payment of any, suspend any deal that was made, and it's looking at every single payment, or every single deal that was made with different individuals, golden parachutes, and so on. In some cases, unfortunately, it was done in a way that it was binding legally, and then we tried to reduce it to the smallest figure possible and make the payments over as long as payroll as possible.
Mm. Okay.
But we're very much aware of that.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
The gentleman that called before made a point about the old board not being held accountable and signing an agreement. I'm interested to know with whom was that agreement signed? Was there prosecutors involved? The action of taking this money was obviously a crime. And the to cover it up or to hold it, reach an agreement between two private parties that, that hold each other unaccountable, how would that involve listeners? And could listeners sue to hold these people accountable?
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Anybody want to answer that, Ray?
Well, the people who made the agreement were the parties that have been involved in suits against the national board. And to dismiss those suits, that was part of the agreement, that unless clear malfeasance could be shown, that none of the individuals would be held as such for expense that could be considered as a frivolous and unnecessary. However, if the current bylaw writing revision process doesn't succeed, if we cannot do it within the 12 months and whatever extension the judge might allow, if it's necessary, hopefully we won't have to do that, the original suit can be reinstated against the parties.
Okay. WBAI, you're in here.
Hi. First, I'd like to thank the staff for having this two-hour slot dedicated to this discussion. And I do have a question directed to Ralph, but before I say that question, I do want to reiterate the opinion that having other personalities on the air, what we do want to get away from, I think, is the cult of personality, which is generated by always having, you know, large blocks of time where one personality is really, you know, associated with that time. If we had the opportunity for more variability and spontaneity and changeableness, where, you know, once a month a voice gets on, or surprises come, where there might be a two-hour slot where things just, you don't expect what's going to happen, and something new can happen, something that might happen once a month or once every other week, that kind of thing, you know, could arise. But to Ralph, you mentioned that in the 70s, the model seemed to work with the labs having a certain way of really determining and helping the decision-making process at the national level. Do you see, at the point we're at historically now, where we do have to incorporate democratization into the process, is there, how would you facilitate bringing the labs into this new empowerment zone from what you learned about how things were going in the 70s?
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I think that we should return to that, you know, model or paradigm in which the local boards were a sort of a critical component of governance, the flow of information, accountability. And I think that there is, you know, as discussed here, a place for elections. But I think that there should be, you know, greater awareness of the broad range of skills and of work that needs to be done, you know, and it that transcends simply the desire, let's say, to have an impact on programming, to call the shots. I think that there is an awareness, you know, of the need for the local boards to play that role. I think that we should go back to what I discussed earlier, that the local boards really look very carefully at the finances of the station, look at the level of listener support, play an important role in, you know, setting up mechanisms, for example, the search committees for the hiring of managers and that sort of thing. So I don't think we're that really far away from it, and I think that there's a, from what I can tell, and I have not been involved as the other people here have been in the nitty gritty of working to set up a new system, but I think there will be a combination of that role in the 70s and, you know, with, I think, a greater communication and accountability to the listeners.
You're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. This is, of course, a community listener forum. And you're on the air.
Hi. It's Sandra. Some of you have received mail. I just have two things to say. It's obvious that, well, maybe just to me, that a chunk of the audience is around the clock at home listening. I'm one of them, pretty much home all the time. We're disabled, possibly the largest minority group in the country because we cut across all the others. There's plenty of stuff I hate, but I love BAI. I don't want to micromanage. Two things. I'd like, since I just got a 75% rent increase right after I paid for my membership, I can see next year I'm going to need an alternate way to work my membership from home. And I don't have a computer. And since only 20% of people are online, I hope you build in a way for us to participate and contribute. The second thing, I like the idea of a program director. Having nothing to do with that, I like Bernard. I like the idea of a program director and a station manager. But thinking in terms of what happened after the Christmas coup, leaving aside the gag order, I think there has to be a built-in way to recall or accountability, not just with input, which I like the idea of, but a way to get rid of a station manager and or program director. And is the program director under the exclusive will of the manager? And I'll listen off the air.
Well, definitely the program director is under the auspices of the both the manager and the program director under the auspices of the Pacifica National Board. And I think there has to be mechanisms built into the national bylaws in terms of dealing with that. Okay? WBAI, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Let me turn the radio down. I have a suggestion to make. I've been to several meetings where various proposals have been vaguely talked about governance. And I'm hearing the same thing going on this program. My suggestion is that people write down specifically in very, you know, fine detail exactly what they propose the governance should be. They could have 15, 20 different plans, and then talk about the good points or the bad points of this plan versus that plan. And in that way, we know what exactly is being talked about instead of these vague...
Well, listener, our last show, which was very specific when we talked about the membership, and there were people who gave their proposals, and we discussed them. Listeners discussed them. This is the first of a. Again, you have to understand this is a series of stuff. We're not going to be able to fit everything in, but your suggestion is taken to heart as far as specificity is concerned. Wow. And so, Carolyn.
Yeah, I think one of the places we do this is at the Bylaws Committee meetings. And there are some proposals being floated out on paper. There is, of course, the old bylaws that we're fighting against. There's a set that Gregory Wunderwheel wrote. There's a revision of those that Larry Romstead put out. And these are paper documents still. And I think one of the things that we really have to work on is getting the word out to listeners in print, forums all over the listening area, where listeners can come, pick up copies of the stuff, and put in their own feedback to it. There is one program on the air, Pacifica Matters, which is designed to give listeners a lot of time to call in specifically.
It's on the air? Where is it on the air?
Well, I'm sorry, it's not yet on the air. There was one broadcast out of Houston last week.
It was webcast, right?
It was broadcast out of Houston and webcast all over the country. So I think that...
Well, what do you think we're doing here, then?
This is it. This is wonderful. Oh. This is fantastic.
Yes, well, let me sort of raise an objection, because I keep hearing people say, well, they haven't made up their mind about this aspect of the governance or that aspect of governance. I think they have to sort of sit down and write out proposals, specifically how the governance would work out, who would elect who's going to make this decision, who's going to make that decision, about programming, about station managers, and so on. So then the listeners know what's being really talked about and what's being explained, instead of these vague statements about constituencies and affirmative action and this group representation,
no,
blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Let me just add that, obviously, you have. If you came to some of our meetings, you missed the last three or four, because in the last three or four, we specifically did that. We had written proposals presented, for example, there was a show last week where we had four individuals who presented their visions of the models of what who's eligible to vote. And, for example, the last week in New Jersey, we had the presentation made in details about the nature of the lab, and we plan on doing the same thing this week. By the way, I should say to people who I was going to say it later, I'll say it now, the venue that was available to us, District Council 1707, is not available to us. We just found out about this, and as a result, the meeting for Tuesday is canceled, and we're going to have one at 1707 again this Thursday at 6:30. So to go back to the point I was making, this show that we're doing now, the idea is to get the general public informed of different issues that are being discussed, and every individual is free to submit partial or full proposal in writing, and hopefully these discussions will lead people to come and join our discussions and do it in a more specific, informed way.
Mm-hmm. Anthony?
Yeah, I agree that the specificity is needed, but what the listener should realize are two things. One is that all of us who are talking now are nothing else but listeners ourselves. We're not paid, and we're involved in a process of trying to discuss these issues. Many of these points could be drafted immediately, but they don't necessarily reflect our best thinking. This is going to be for the long term. Perhaps the caller may be able to attend some of the discussions. In New Jersey, Maplewood, New Jersey, last week, for instance, at the bylaws meeting, there was a systematic discussion, point by point, of the old Pacifica bylaws versus one proposal that was being offered. In addition to that proposal, other people had an opportunity to pose differences or distinctions between both of those models and approaches, and more of that needs to happen. So I think it's very appropriate now that people still haven't formulated every one of their opinions. However, if we are to be as inclusive as possible, I think an even more critical position that we have to address is our ability to approach listeners on the air, but also in venues that get us into communities where these issues are also in need of further elaboration.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning.
How are you?
It's very nice to hear, and I want to thank you, okay? This is really thankless work that you're involved in. People do not understand, and, you know, you're not going to get universal approval. And this is what brings me to a little hortatory remarks. First of all, it is very significant that we not take on too much on the plate. And I'm beginning to collect this sense that there are so many complexities here, and there's so much desire basically to integrate the listeners in a proper way, to get the finances straight, all simultaneously. For instance, democratization. What listeners really want, and what they always want, and what keeps them coming, is that at some interval they have a voice that is listened to. And that can be implemented program-wise without over-engagement in terms of, I believe one gentleman referred to it as micro, and then the sister said, no, it's really more about democracy. What we have to try to understand is, given the climate of the people in this country right now, how much democracy is good for our overall purpose, or must it be tempered with something else? I don't think democracy of necessity has to be the paradigm for this station to survive and do a good job. But listener voice and involvement has to be protected. My concern about democracy, as much as I love it, not that I see it play out anywhere, including in the United States of America, is that we have no control a person with ulterior motive. That really concerns me. We want voice by trusted people. If you proceed from the assumption that you are a public trust that is locked into your charter, it seems to me that a good deal of these things could go away. You're not going to get 100% listener involvement in these kinds of matters, as you well know, because you're the ones that are doing all the grunt work. But my plea to the listeners is we cannot be, at this critical stage, we cannot be everything to everybody. And I don't think that was the true intent, as I have reviewed the charter, of what this organization is supposed to be. And the notion that we're to this or we're to that, I mean, we can get off into that. But our basic mission is to inform, even more than it is to entertain. And if you would do this by first stabilizing yourself, get your priorities, and we need the money now. Stabilize the money program while the groups are working on the bylaws and the political aspects for a year. But to put all this all on one plate at one time is a very, very formidable challenge, and I'm all for you. But it seems to me that discretion is the better part of valor in matters of this nature.
Okay, well, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Gary Bird's going to be coming on for 5 hours of programming starting in June or in May. He was one of the big stars of WLAB. And in the process, I think, let's see, Fred Hershkowitz, Mike Fader's shows are being taken off the air. I don't know if they're being moved.
No, that's not true. I think you have to really become informed before you start speaking of matters like this. I think that Gary Bird will be coming on from on Fridays between 10 and 2. And I think there's a series of programs that he's going to do. And I'm not sure myself exactly what's going to go on.
Well, according to a series of newspaper articles in the Daily News and in the Daily Challenge, Gary mm-hmm. Bird in June is going to be getting 7 to 10 p.m. So, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe the other shows will be moved.
Well, I think so. I think both Mike Fader and Fred Hershkowitz don't want to be on the Friday night slots, and I think that at best that slot is temporary.
Well, okay. Well, anyway, what I'm asking is about the process. I've been a fan of Gary Bird's at LIB. He's a big star in radio. So I'm trying to find out about the process by which Fader and Hershkowitz are being taken out of that slot.
Well, see, I think you have to speak with people who are knowledgeable, and as I always do, and it's fun now. I'm going to give you an answer. It's my prerogative to say to you is to call Bernard White.
Well, is it this show?
I don't know. I mean, he's the program director.
I know, but how is the process of shows being replaced and being given to other people? Is that being done democratically? Is it being done through the committees, through the labs, or is it being done just by one person or two people? That's why we're calling up and talking about this stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a very legitimate question. It's a complicated question. I think we could have another 2 hours on that one, but I think it is an important question. We've been focusing so much on, and this was, I guess, what was meant to be, the local board, that we haven't talked about a whole host of structural issues involving this, the way we work, including how program decisions are made. Mm-hmm. There's even another issue that we haven't touched on that I think is important, which is the evolution of the power of the executive director in Pacifica, and how do you make that person accountable to the national board? But I think the listener has asked an interesting question, and I'd be interested. There are people I think here who I know are thinking and addressing this issue that maybe want to comment on it.
Well, the last point that you made about the we're going to take that up in 2 weeks, at least in our meeting and hopefully in the shows. Well, as people probably know already, we're going to be preempted because of fundraising activities for BAI, which are very important, and I believe that's for 2 weeks.
8th to the 24th.
Yes. But our plan was, before we were aware of the fundraising dates, to have in 2 weeks the discussion of the relative power of the executive director vis-à-vis the board and the power and so on. However, you're right. The question that the listener posed is very important, and some of that process is being developed right now. Tomorrow, I understand that between 8 and 9, there's going to be a report to the listeners.
Yes.
And I would suggest that the callers, other people interested in answering that,
he asked such a specific question, that's why I directed him towards Bernard, because I don't know how it happened either. All right. We'll try that again. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Bertold. I was on this show about 2 weeks ago.
Bertold, how are you?
I'm okay.
Hello, brother.
Okay. I thought I'm a little confused by this show was about the role of the station board, right?
Well, it was about, first of all, we started off with the history of Pacifica. We Ralph gave us a synopsis of the history, but then we got into exactly what the local board was, is, and will be. That's what we're really talking about.
Okay. Because I'd like to give my 2 cents of, I think that the role of the
give
board...
Give 3 cents.
Huh?
Give 3 cents.
3 cents?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I think one of the role of the board... should be to some of the roles of the board, for example, should be to elect 2 members of the TNB, right, Pacifica National Board, attend board meetings bi-monthly on a regular basis, because there have been complaints about board members right now not being active, and actually the local board right now not being active even before the diminishing of their powers. They should participate actively in a committee and attend meetings. They should assist and advise the station manager. They should assist in the report to the listeners and the community. They should evaluate the station's achievement as related to the Pacifica original mission, like meeting the programming needs of the community. They should actively initiate and participate in fundraising for the stations so that we can reduce fundraisings and the pressure on the station manager and the program director to do fundraising. This should assess the needs of the community and make recommendations to program director and review the assessments annually. They should actively assist in the expansion of the listenership, especially in the underrepresented communities. They should be the liaison between the DAI and other signal areas. They should represent the station before the community and the world. They should receive and consider public input into planning and decision-making in developing programming, which meets the needs and interests of the community. They should serve on the panel with listeners who assist and the station board in the differentiation of hate speech from other speech, which panel to be convened in whenever such is needed. They should contribute expertise, i.e. laws, accounting, organizing, to the station. They should appoint a standing committee to prepare and present a report to the listener annually for approval. The mission review would evaluate the station's achievement in conforming to the founding principle, meeting the programming needs of the community, to meeting its programming goal, and to providing educational and cultural services to the community. These are my 3 cents, Andre.
Okay, well, I appreciate your 3 cents. It was more like 4 cents, but we'll let you slide. All right. Well, thank you, Bertol.
All right,
again, hopefully you'll be able to come on the air and expound upon those things that you've mentioned, which to me seem mostly like duties and not responsibilities, but then we could talk about that at some other time. All right? Thank you.
All right.
Bob.
Very, very briefly, is it realistic to expect an unpaid board where a number of the members don't show up regularly to really get involved in the details of a station like that?
Mm. Well,
yeah, I think one of the issues is that there's a very long list Bertold has, and that's when I was proposing a program council and or an advisory council as opposed to a governance board, I think that those duties could easily be divided.
Now, how would this work, the evaluation of programming, and how would you envision it?
Well, you know, it's one of the few duties of the board under the Corporation for Public Broadcasting Guidelines is to evaluate the general manager and issue an annual report.
I think we ought to do away with the CPB. That's my own personal opinion.
I agree.
I think that because those are restrictions that I don't think that we as a radio station, as an independent radio station, and I think that the money that they give us, maybe $1.2 to $1 million a year, I think we can get it some other kind of way, or we'll have to think of it. Think of how we can replace that kind of money, mm-hmm. rather than be under the auspices of such
Dred,
an organization.
I have a different, you know, perspective on this. I think that we need to fight tooth and nail any attempt of CPB to tell us how to do business and maintain our independence. At the same time, CPB, you know, raises not to speak of the financial condition we're in and talk about throwing away, you know, $1.5 million or whatever. But CPP dispenses taxpayers' money. We, you know, for not for specific programs, we don't go after that kind of funding, but for, you know, general operations. And it seems to me that if anybody in this country deserves the taxpayers' money for fulfilling, and we fulfill more than, you know, any other broadcasting entity, the Charter of Public Broadcasting, as it was expressed in the Carnegie Commission in 1967, it is us. And it shouldn't just be the classical music jukeboxes and others. So I think that we deserve that money, and we deserve that money without strings. As long as we take a principal position, don't let ourselves be cowed or manipulated into doing things we don't want to do, we should not throw away that money.
Well, if we can do it without strings, I would be totally down with that.
As a general principle, I would simply propose that there is no such thing as money from the government without strings.
But, okay. But Carolyn, you know, you keep talking about programming, you know. Are we all Luftmenschen here who have no worry about the money? Now, there's never any talk about the fundraising aspect of the board. I mean, that seems to be less sexy, less appealing. The fact remains, when we moved into the studio, Karen Frillman, chair of the BAI board, and I worked, you know, with her and others, we raised some significant sums of money, and I think that's one of the things that we need to do. And I'm a little concerned about a conversation in which people are rightfully very interested in programming but seem to be a little cavalier about the money and the fact that the local boards can and should, you know, raise money and help with that financial equation.
Actually, people have been looking at ways to actually use CPP money, at least for now, and still have an independent voice. One of the suggestions has been, I believe Carolyn alluded to that, would be to have a formal lab, local advisory board that would meet the requirement of the CPP, and have a station board that would actually be empowered the way this present board is not. Personally, I feel that the lab actually, many of the functions that Berthold mentioned are being performed by the lab mm-hmm. right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do agree that the lab has been functioning on an even level, and one other thing that I'm personally hoping for is that through that process of election and really involvement of the membership, that we will have people who are much more active. Because what's been happening is that not only some members are not active enough for a variety of reasons. I mean, some of it is very clear that if somebody lives way in Rockland County, it is harder for them to have a direct impact on every meeting and you know, that takes place here. So their role clearly would be also to be working with their own communities. So I guess some of what we have to think about is how to really allow activities to take place outside of New York City to be part of this big, larger process. But the second aspect of that lack of involvement has been really draining the energies of those who are involved, and some of people actually burn out. But the point I'm trying to make is, the main point I'm trying to make is that I do believe that the prerogative of the lab, which is to take a look and evaluate programming in general, should be maintained. And the lab has been doing that. As a matter of fact, one of the weapons that we used against your system was to evaluate the negative changes that existed in programming and representation of people of color and the quality of programming under the administration of U2 SLED, and show clearly. Now, that information went to the National Board, which at this point obviously didn't care about. But I think that's a function that should be maintained.
Anthony?
Yes, the lab really has all of the roles that I discussed earlier to play, and many of those have been played, and that Berthold delineated just now. One of the big problems that we had from a practical standpoint in the most recent period, and I guess this should at least be mentioned, is that while we were struggling to return Pacifica to our rightful hands, that struggle was one in which frequently within our own group of people struggling, the lab was seen as, in some respects, part of the problem. It was often called self-selecting. Even as we fought to make the lab more responsive and accountable, in many of those very meetings where that process had to go on, it wasn't a smooth process. It was often, you know, rife with a lot of problems. We are now at a point where we think that the listener community as a whole and the lab have to become one. Whether we continue to be called labs or we become station boards or some other term reflective of our role and responsibility, the level of work that was detailed by Berthold a few moments ago requires a commitment that will, first of all, mean that each person is extremely committed and involved, but it will also mean that we need to have at least a large enough number of people through which the divisions of labor can occur. Lastly, with respect to the lab, there has to be a way that non-elected participation from the broader listener community can be infused. And I feel that both in involving outreach, working with the station, and with the listener community, the lab can be that liaison, not only to the world, as Berthold mentioned, but also internally we can play that role of assisting listeners and the station practically work with one another to expand.
We are under the tyranny of the clock, as one would say. And I'd like to give folks 30 seconds to give their last remarks. And again, this is a continuing conversation.
Yep.
And there'll be another community listener forum in the very near future. Starting with Ray. Ray, you want to start off?
Actually, I would rather finish.
Okay.
Because I want to make an announcement.
Okay, Bob?
Okay, I didn't have time to prepare, so I'll go ahead. Okay.
30 seconds.
Thank you for having me in particular, but I think this panel is wonderful. What we're trying to do is a very difficult thing. We're going against the tide of a greater society, which is based on winner-take-all. I describe it as a voting-only democracy. The people don't have to know what they're voting about, but as long as they get out and vote, we call it a democracy. I think transparency is very important. Programs like this should continue a full range of openness and consideration of all the problems. Viewers should be aware of that.
Bob Goldberg from the Long Island Friends. Carolyn Burden.
Yes, I'd like to thank you for this time. It was a good idea, and may we have many more of these sessions. For listeners, I'm struck by the few people on the web. For listeners who need a hotline, try 212-465-7562. That's 465-7562. And on the internet, www.wbai.net for all those documents that you may not have seen in print, and leave word for information that you need.
Anthony, 30 seconds.
Yes, I'd like people to really get involved. Come out to the next bylaws meeting, which will be this Thursday at 75 Varick Street, and let's start from there. That will be a way of getting involved. If you're interested in getting more involved with CPR, you should call 718-859-0857.
Say that one more time.
718-859-0857.
Ralph Ingham.
Well, I don't have much to add to what I've said so far, except to reiterate that Pacifica, it seems to me, is the most important experiment in independent and alternative media in the history of this country. It has a tremendous role to play, and I think I am encouraged by the fact that whatever our disagreements are, so many people representing so many different constituencies and ideologies are putting their heads together to try to make it better.
I support that. I support that 100%. I'm glad to say that from where I'm sitting, I can see the board, and I can, until Dredd announced that the show was over,
was
the
lit.
Whole board was lit, and that's supposed to be not a very sexy issue. And I apologize to the listeners for not providing more input time for them to input. Maybe we should move to 3 hours. Seriously though, well, maybe it should be serious. Yeah.
Yeah.
As Anthony said, people should consider coming to the next bylaws meeting, which is at 75 Varick Street, 14th floor, the offices of District Council, 1707. You can take the 1, 2, A, C, E trains to Canal Street.
Okay, so we've been, again, the Community Listening Forum number 3, and I want to thank Ralph Engelman, Bob Goldberg, Carolyn Burden, Anthony McCall, and, of course, Ray LaForest. And special thanks to Janice K. Bryan, who was unable to be here. I'm Judge Scott Keys. See you next time on the radio.
Malcolm gave us back to ourselves. Who are we, he gave Africa back to us, our humanity back to us.
On Saturday, May 18th, the Mecca Evers College community will present a special tribute to Malcolm X on the anniversary of his 77th birthday.